Hi, you're listening to Fresh from the Hill. I'm your host, Sydney Mann. Today, I will be speaking to alum Aja Torre, who graduated from the hotel school in December 2017. Well, hi, I haven't seen you in a while. I hope you're doing well.
Good to see you, Sydney.
Yeah, so I guess to start, for whoever might be listening to this, can you tell us what brought you to Cornell and to the hotel school specifically?
Sure. So back in high school, I was a very ambitious nerd, and I kind of finessed my way into an internship at the National Archives in Washington, D.C. Oh, wow. And I worked as an intern for the event planning team there, and I was supposed to be a volunteer. I said, well, what if I did something that's not volunteering? And they took me on. I was under Quinn Brewster's wing. And because I had exposure to event planning, I was super interested in like the hospitality world. So that was my junior year of high school. A year later, you know, I'm looking at schools, et cetera. And Cornell being the number one hospitality school in the world was my ultimate reach goal. And I was really, really lucky to get in. I guess all the schoolwork plus the internship paid off. But yeah, that was kind of my journey into the hotel school world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned event planning and having an interest in like developing that through discovering the archives, which is really interesting. I didn't realize that there were events for like a big archive.
Yeah, it was weird to like yell at Homeland Security at 17, telling them not to put drinks down on documents.
Oh my God, I'm sure.
Yeah, really powerful.
So when you got to Cornell and the hotel school, can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in event planning and some of the things you learned that helped you in your future endeavors?
Yeah, so I'd say the biggest event that I planned while at Cornell was Slope Day. So I got involved my freshman year, and I was like, you know, looking for something. I had done student government in high school. I had done all kinds of leadership roles within high school. And so I was kind of still on that kick. I was like, okay, I'm a freshman, but I want to be involved. And so Slope Day kind of fell in my lap from going to like Club Fest. So this is, you know, shout out Club Fest, that actually worked. And so I started attending meetings and got more and more involved. And one of the leadership people was a hotelier as well. So like kind of following in her footsteps, I became like a Slope Day protege and then worked my way up. And by senior year, I was, you know, bringing Galantis to the Hill. So those were really fun years of event planning and kind of putting my past experience to good use. But also on the flip side, like being a hotelier in general, I've always been the hostess with the mostest, as we all are. And I know, I think that kind of shines through in my adulthood. And even though I work in e-commerce and haven't really been explicitly in hospitality for a few years now, I still think that the soft skills of being a good host transition to being good at customer service and understanding people on a really deep level. So yeah, vendor relationships are the same, in my opinion, as customer service relationships.
Yeah, and it's awesome that you were able to be involved in the Slope Day planning.
Especially
picking Galantis. For whoever would be listening to this, like, that's a huge deal to be able to be on the Slope Day planning committee.
Really, really cool. That was my senior year, so that was like my one shot. I was like, this one has to be epic. And we got super lucky that they were available. They were really, really nice, and I may or may not have fallen in love with their like sound guy.
Oh, I love that. And you mentioned now you're in e-commerce. So I guess to go back a bit, can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you are doing now? Because you have a lot going on now.
Sure. So I definitely have, I've lived quite a few lives since graduating from Cornell. So right out of college, since I graduated early, I actually stayed that semester on the Slope to both work Slope Day, but also I worked full time for the hotel school in external relations. So still more of that event planning world, was working with like the real estate crew and all that. So it was an interesting transition, but ultimately my goal was to move to New York City and find myself as an adult in New York. And so I started at Walmart e-commerce back in 2018, and that was my first step into the e-com world. As many Walmart veterans will say, we were all CEOs of our own category. So I was deep in the ditches of of hair colors. If you ever need someone to give you advice on what hair color to buy, I'm literally your girl. I was merchandising thousands and thousands of SKUs for about for almost 2 years. After, you know, working in Walmart for that long, I was like, okay, well, I got the retail side. I know how to navigate Walmart through like the back of my hand. What's out there? What are the brands? And ended up working at the cookware company, which is exactly what it sounds like. And they must have gotten there first because the name is exactly what it is. and I was slinging pots and pans for another year and a half into the pandemic. And once the pandemic came around, I was starting to like kind of get like into like a funk. I was like, man, like New York, like this is not what I wanted. Like I am now almost 3 years into the city and I was just kind of like ready to shake it up. And so by 2021, I decided to switch roles again, but I also was cast on a television show for Bravo. So it's called Real Girlfriends in Paris. And part of my shaking it up was, you know what, I have family in Paris, why not move to Paris? And a casting team was looking for women who were living their best lives in Paris, and I happened to fit the profile. So while I was getting ready to move to Paris on a whim, it seemed like kismet that Bravo was also looking for young women in that exact position. So I picked up my laptop and my luggage and moved with my remote job all the way across to Paris, where I was working for another small e-commerce company that has unfortunately closed its doors since filming and since, you know, just bad investments. People make mistakes. But today I have my own company called Atelier Touré, and I am contracted under other clients of mine who are still the e-commerce world. So I'm working Shopify, working Amazon, working really anything that's online and digital. I'm your girl. So e-commerce optimization has fully become my bread and butter.
Wow. And it sounds like you mentioned you were in a funk with the pandemic and you had been moving jobs a lot. And New York, you mentioned, was kind of not necessarily that energy you kind of wanted for yourself. I had no idea you were already planning to move to Paris before the show. I had just assumed that you moved to Paris for the show. So you were already moving. That's big life change.
Yeah. So I kind of had planned out like, you know, the 6 month, 1 year plan for myself. So I think as early as May of 2021, or was it? Yeah, like March or May is one of the M months, probably on my birthday. So March, I was I was already thinking, you know what, like this is my last time in New York for a little while. Like I need to go somewhere else. And like I mentioned, I have family in Paris. I've been going there since I was a kid and pretty frequently in the last few years. I've been going to Europe basically every year since I was like maybe like 17 or 18. So I've been traveling a lot on my own or like in school groups and that kind of thing. So I wanted to live somewhere on my own rather than just have a vacation here or there. And so I talked to my aunt who is established out here. She's been here for over 30 years. And I told her, I was like, hey, I'm thinking about moving to Paris. Like, can you help me out? So she was one of the reasons I was able to get my visa because she was my host, so to speak, for my homestay. So while I was looking for apartments, she was essentially like, if I needed it, this is my backup. Didn't end up needing it, managed to get an apartment on my own, but getting the visa, like the process was show off that I have income, show that I have family there, show that I'm not working there, but I work fully in America. And all those things were easy enough for me to check off, got my travel insurance, and I got my visa in like 8 days. So it was pretty lucky, and everything just started to fall into place after that. After the visa, I got someone to live in my apartment. After getting someone to live in my apartment, I found an apartment in Paris. It was just, it felt like the right move for a lot of reasons because it was so frictionless to get to that stage.
It's important to follow your gut, like as you've been saying, especially when you want to change. And it's sometimes hard and scary to make that transition. But when things like work out the way they do, it's kind of like, why not? You also went to school in New York, so it makes a lot of sense wanting the change in setting. So how has that transition then been for you? As you said, you've had family there. I'm assuming you speak French.
Oui.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I speak French. Have since I was a kid. Like I learned it, I think technically before English. Like wow. I think up until I was like 4 years old, I was like very, very much bilingual. But then once you enter the American school system, like it's English all the way. So I still speak it with my mom and dad and sisters. You know, everyone. Especially if we want to talk smack in America, like it's really nice to be able to just like whisper something in French. You completely lose that when you're in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So no making fun of people's hats anymore. But yeah, I think like assimilation is different for everybody. I definitely had a leg up by speaking the language. Granted, people still will be a little judgy about my accent. I did learn it while simultaneously speaking English, so it's not perfect. But my grammar's good and people understand me, even if they want to respond in English. I just kind of doubled down. I'm like, no, we're speaking French now. And yeah, I think that as far as like working remotely on my New York time versus living in Paris, it's been nice. I get those 6 hours extra in the day to explore a little bit. I take my lunch break as a dinner break instead. It's not that different. And I'm also a night owl. So it's really nice to start my job at like 3 p.m. instead of like 8 or 9 a.m. So I'd say that if anyone is interested in making that a broad switch, even if it's just for a couple months, I honestly recommend it because it's definitely a nice change up from the 9-to-5 grind.
Yeah. Especially after the pandemic when so many people have been isolated for so long, and it sounds like traveling is very important to you.
100%.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, moving to a new city, one of the benefits of being on the show is that you have five new friends, and you have your family there, but I'm wondering how the show has helped you also assimilate into France. Cause I know there are five other women with you. That could be chaotic sometimes, but I'm sure it's also been nice to meet new people outside of your sphere.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's like, it's kind of like a catch-22 where it's like, I have built-in friends because of the show and they're the people who I spent the most time with, but it's also like, well, if they're not in town, who are my friends? Because I didn't have the opportunity to like really get to meet a lot of people outside of filming, just I was so busy.
Yeah.
So it's either I'm filming or it was working my 9-to-5, so I'm just like stuck inside. So I think one thing that I would like to do, and I'm currently in France because I'm still, you know, trying to do the full bi-continental, like I live in New York and I live in Paris. So one of my biggest goals in these last few months coming back to Paris was to make more friends outside of the show and like make different connections that are my own, you know, like not necessarily attached to an adventure that I had. Like I love that those were my friends and that's definitely a journey that we'll always share. But it's also nice just to have like some like going to bar friends who you see every now and then, and it's just like nice little chats on the text and that kind of thing. So I do have a few friends who I've made in the last few months. So definitely pat myself on the back for still, I still got it in me. You know, I didn't need a casting agent to make friends with me.
Well, it's just like when you arrive at Cornell, right? Like, you know, some people, well, I knew some people from home, and then you start to meet new people that you would not have met otherwise through groups and such. So it's very important to, and you mentioned like something important to you is immersing yourself in the culture. So meeting new people is always so exciting and learning from them too. I'm curious, going from Cornell to then being on a TV show, how was that for you? A firm going from like not really having cameras on you in your day-to-day life to then being in a position where you now have your own company and you're in the public eye?
So I think for me, being in the public eye is an interesting way of putting it because I've been a performer for years. So one of my biggest things that I did at Cornell outside of Silk Day and just my major was I was a singer. So I was in the Cornell University chorus, which, if I'm being fancy about it, we were a semi-professional traveling collegiate choir. We sang internationally. I went to Guatemala, Mexico, went to California. Like, we had a Gulf tour, we had an East Coast tour. We had so many really cool opportunities singing all over the country and beyond. And so being a singer and performer, and I was on the Cornell song CD with a solo, like, my voice is already kind of capsuled in perpetuity. So I think that having cameras on my face wasn't as crazy, because I've already had a lot of exposure as far as, like, I don't know, it's very raw to, like, be a singer and, like, get up on stage and perform, especially give a solo or anything like that. So there's a little bit of acting when you're singing, in terms of, like, okay, think about your face, like, relax your face, make sure that you look pleasant, that kind of thing. And so I think that having that in the back of my mind as a singer kind of transitioned to how I felt on camera. It's like, I just stop making your stink faces. And I was not very good at hiding them. But yeah, I think anyone would get nervous to suddenly be on camera all the time. Yeah. But I will say that, like, after the first, like, few days of doing it, I got pretty used to it pretty quick, because for one, you start to develop relationships with the people on the other side of the camera, with the producers, et cetera. And so I think as a social person in general, it made it a lot easier. So the banter that I had with their girls in scene, like, really, like, overshadowed whatever is
I was gonna say, like, on the show, you're, like, super charismatic and super entertaining, and I mean, I follow you on social media too, and it's like, and I also know you, so I feel like the bubbly personality has always shined through. And I knew you were a singer too. I was going to bring that up, because, again, being in the chorus at Cornell is a big important tradition.
Yeah, I love Cornell chorus. It was definitely a huge part of my Cornell career, I have to say. Music has always been super important to me. So it was nice that I got some, you know, class credit for it. But but also, I remember, like, when I was a freshman and I first auditioned, I was like, this is it. Like, I'm going to find out if I'm a good singer or not. Like, if I don't get in, like, I'm done for. So that's how much it meant to me. I was like, my singing career either starts or ends here with Cornell Chorus. And I was very, very blessed to be a part of that for 4 years, or three and a half.
Like you said, singing and performing helps you be able to interact with a lot of people and also perform in a way where it's not necessarily performing.
Acting.
Yeah, it's not acting, but it's exactly.
You're connecting. Fun. Yeah, I think honestly that's the best way. It's like, I connect with an audience in both scenarios while still being my authentic self. So if I'm singing, I'm being myself and people see me, but like, I'm making eye contact, or like, maybe someone's just like trying to see, like, reading her face. Like, how do I feel about the words that I'm singing? And I think same thing goes for camera, is like, I'm still being authentic to myself. But there's always going to be a little inkling. I was like, is that funny? Like, did I say something funny or not?
Yeah.
So it's like, how am I connecting with the audience is still going to be like at the back of my mind, but it's never forced and it's never like an intentional bit. It's more like retrospective, like, okay, like, that's how that scene went. I wonder how people will feel about it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And I think there's like a stigma probably around some reality shows where it's like, it's acting, but I mean, from what I've seen, everything you've done, it just feels like Aja, like, we're laughing with you, and it's the personality shines through. That's what I'm trying
to say. That's awesome. That's definitely a really big compliment, because I think everyone's fear is that they be portrayed in a manner or light that they're not comfortable with. And I definitely pride myself on, like, when I watch it back, I'm like, LOL, that's literally just me. And I think it's nice to hear the people who do know me, who watch the show, feel the same way.
It's been exciting, if anything. I love reality TV. So it's so nice when you're watching and you're like, that could be like my best friend or somebody's best, you know, like somebody you can sit and speak with.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you're in France now. And Can you tell me a little bit more then about your business and how that has come to form?
Yeah. So I guess it came to form because I wanted to be untethered from the United States when it came to my ability to travel and what my options were. So for anyone who's like an ILR nerd, you know, about labor relations and like a W-2, it's going to usually keep me in the US regardless. And that was one of my biggest arcs on the television show, which is, can I stay in France or do I have to keep coming back to the US to work? And so given that that was one of my biggest obstacles in my desire to live abroad, I decided, you know what, well, if I get my own company and people can contract me under a 1099, well, I've solved the problem. I am no longer tethered to one country because I run my own taxes, I do my own thing, and I can set up my business in both the US and France, which is my intention. And so, yeah, it was more a strategic move on my part to, I guess, ensure that I was able to continue doing what I love, which is travel and see the world and like be around my family, but also maintain relationships with bigger brands and bigger companies. So while contracting for those companies and businesses, I'm still able to do the e-commerce that I like and to work in the marketing and digital marketing and all those different aspects that I had in past jobs persist. And so Atelier Touré is my LLC, and I'm able to kind of make it all work. And then I also am working on like a lifestyle brand to come up to be my next e-commerce endeavor for myself. So it's exciting to have some projects and be able to kind of use my contracting work like to subsidize what I'm doing on this side. So it's kind of a well-rounded machine that I'm currently operating. It's new. I'm new to entrepreneurship, but it's been good. And I definitely have Cornell to thank for my ability to have that confidence and expertise to kind of jump into it.
Yeah. It does sound like the many facets of like the hotel school and also your performing career have really helped you establish relationships and connections, but also like a business structure, like figuring out how to actually set up and run a business, which is pretty impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely did not take my degree lightly. I was like, I have a business degree. Like, I'm going to be a businesswoman. And here I am, a business degree kind of glorified in a way because I also am like a really big foodie as a result. So yeah, a lot of my interests that led to my both academic and professional career are things that I intend to spend more time and developing and kind of honing in on.
It's very exciting when like your degree pays off. And also I've noticed from Cornell, a lot of people keep that same spirit and like motivation and drive from.
Totally.
Yeah. So can you tell me about maybe some of your role models at the hotel school or some groups you got involved in that were important to you or influential to you at school?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think that honestly, Slope Day was one of the most influential groups that I was a part of because it was the most like well-rounded area of my leadership kind of on full display. I worked my way from bottom to top, and every year I was a new position. So from like, you know, Slope Fest to, I guess I was Slope Fest, and then I was vice president, and then I was president. So kind of moved my way up the ranks. And in that process, like learning about contract negotiations and exposure to all these like different like talent agencies, like who knew that one day I might need a talent agency. So I think that, the teammates that I worked with, and also our supervisor, Joe Scafita, like he was super smart, super nice, and just a hilarious guy all around. And he is definitely like a big motivator for why I was even interested in the entertainment business to any degree. So I think if it weren't for Slope Day, my years at Cornell might have been a little bit more boring. Like it was definitely one of those things that I was always looking forward to, and was kind of fun to like be one of like five people who held like the biggest secret on campus for most of the year. So it was also a huge test of willpower, because you can ask any of my best friends, I never told anyone, whoever the artist was that year, I never told. So I'm also, I guess, a trustworthy person as a result of Soul Day.
I mean, that's hard. That is very hard, especially our senior year when it was Galantis, because everybody was super excited. I remember that. Yeah.
I remember I had like a mini heart attack because one fraternity had tried to get Galantis as their own Slope Day performance. And so I get like approached in the Statler Library. He goes, hey, like, is it true? Like, Galantis is coming. And I just like froze my tracks. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He goes like, well, you can drop the ad because I already know because we called them. And I was like, no. And so we had to fast track the release of the artist's name by like almost a month.
Oh my God.
So that was definitely a nightmare. But, you know, people were still excited and pumped regardless. But it was kind of like, dang. Like, we didn't get to do it my way. We didn't get to do it our way at all. But yeah, you know, it happens.
Rolling with the punches. I mean, when you are working in entertainment, it like you mentioned contract negotiation, but then also confidentiality.
Exactly. So I guess the next big secret that was in my life was filming a TV show. I didn't tell anybody. And then, you know, it all rolled around. People were like, wait, is this a joke? Like, what do you mean? And I was, you know, I was excited to share it, but I took it very seriously to keep everything under wraps. I guess because of that one experience, I was probably a little bit triggered.
And it's important though, when you are representing like a institution or even a television show, that you respect the other people, but you're also respecting yourself and giving yourself that control.
Yeah, no matter how exciting. I have a very good friend. She's obsessed with Bravo, and so she had a Bravo themed birthday party, and it took all my willpower not to tell her, because I was like, God, she would love this so much. But I told her, like, you know, in due time, and she was like freaking out, and I was like, see, this is why I didn't tell you back months ago, because you would have told every single person you know.
That must have been very hard to keep a secret.
I just, you know, I've never been like super into like social media. So I use it kind of as like a jokey platform versus anything super serious. So it was easy enough for me not to post what I was up to, because sometimes I'm just not posting for a couple of days anyway. Given I was also abroad and I wasn't seeing my friends every day, like, people wouldn't be like, hey, what were you up to today? I was in a different country. No one knew. So it was easy enough to hide in that respect. And I wasn't like MIA on the internet, because it was kind of within my natural patterns of not posting and that kind of thing. So it's like, oh, it's just a close up of my nose. Oh, that's normalized.
It sounds like overall it's been a great experience for you and transformative.
Yeah, definitely no regrets. And I think that the relationships that came out of it, I'm sure if you've watched the show, then you can see what the undercurrents are like and what the relationships are forming out to be. And I think it was an important step for all of us for different reasons. But for myself, like, it was kind of like a testament to, you know, relationship development and understanding, like, what are my own boundaries. You never know, like, apparently I can cry on camera and not be that embarrassed about it coming off of it.
Yeah,
it was one of those things I never really expected to do. I you know, I can always joke like, oh, I'm perfect for reality TV, like, I think I'm hilarious, but then someone else thinks you're funny, and then all of a sudden you are reality TV. And that's basically what happened. People liked me enough that they wanted to follow my life.
Yeah. And on the show, as you said, you are like going through like life chapters, whether that's dating or work, and then also friendship struggles or maintaining these relationships. So like you said, there's the aspect of I'm funny, but then it's also like, oh, this is still my life and I'm still living it, you know. I'm crying on camera, I'm surprised I'm doing that, you know. It's very interesting to watch the development, as you've just said.
yeah
So I'm curious, bringing it back to Cornell a little, like, I guess beyond Slope Day, what are some of the memories that have really stuck with you?
I think one of the best memories was that snow day junior year. So this was 2017. Yeah, March 2017.
Yeah, I know.
Because it was my birthday week. Oh. And I was, you know, not expecting to do much for my birthday. My birthday's on St. Patrick's Day, but that week turned out to be the first snow day in like, what, 24 years? So getting to actually take a day off of classes and hang out with my friends to celebrate my birthday, definitely top 10 memories for me. I also think that touring in Guatemala and Mexico when I was a sophomore for chorus, that was a really, really incredible experience. Definitely wouldn't have had the opportunities to see so many cities in Mexico and Guatemala. And it was just awesome to sing in all these really historic churches and chapels and everything. And it was just a beautiful tour in general. Aside from like ration sharing bananas at one point, because they had miscounted how much we needed for snacks on one bus ride. So it's like 8 hours. All I got was a banana and peanut butter.
Oh.
So there was good and there was bad in that tour, but overall it was definitely a really important one that I think not everyone gets to take part in exciting travels like that. And it was a mixture of music and service, two things that I'm very passionate about. So that was another top 10 for me. And then I think the last one is very hotel-y specific, but my restaurant management night, I guess for both Cornell and non-Cornell people who may be listening, restaurant management is essentially the amalgamation of my entire major in one class. So it is everything that we've learned throughout like freshman, sophomore, and sometimes junior year applied into one course where we're literally running a restaurant and managing a restaurant on campus in Statler. So Establishment is the name of the restaurant. And I will never forget that night because it was a lot of planning. It was a lot of work. I was back of house and I loved to cook. So it was a really exciting night. And I think that almost every hotel will say the same, that they will never forget the restaurant management night for good or for bad. I think that was one of like the top events for me because, you know, it's a rewarding night and you get to see a lot of hard work come to fruition. And you get to see your creativity and teamwork and everything like that, like on display for other people to literally witness and taste and experience. So I think that was probably my favorite night of like being a hotelier was doing that. And then actually I have my last one. My last one was from culinary when I was a sophomore. At the end of the semester, we do kind of like a MasterChef type mystery, like a mystery box that we get like random ingredients in a box and we're little teams. And then you have to make like a 3 or 4 course meal, for the judges, which is our professors. And it was my first time ever making a chocolate mousse from scratch. And I made it myself, yada, yada. And then Chef White came up to us like after we were done. He's like giving us our scores and everything. He's like, okay, who made the chocolate mousse? And I'm like, oh, that was me. And I'm like, fingers crossed, like hoping I did a good job. He goes, every year someone tries to make a mousse and they fail miserably. And I literally started tearing up. He goes, you're the first person to do it so well. And I was like, oh, I felt like I won $1 million. Like, I literally like, I know you shouldn't hug your professors, but like, I like broke out of like the line of like, said all the things, Chef White. So like, I'm like tearing up right now. Like it was such a happy moment. And that was double down on the fact that Chef Vesco later that day, like we're cleaning up our station, but like whatever food we had left over, we would leave like at the ends of our station for anyone to try and like walk by. So he like grabs like a tasting spoon and like dipped it into the chocolate mousse. And I see him turn around. And then he like does a double take and he goes like just like jaw drops and then really grabs a gigantic spoon, slaps it into a bowl and then walked away with like 4 spoonfuls of chocolate. So such a rewarding experience. Definitely like ended that class on a high note. I was like, wow, like I have the touch, I have the magic touch, like I can cook. So that was definitely one of my favorite experiences that coming out of that class.
That's what a Top Chef moment. You're totally. On the line. Yeah.
Gordon Ramsay, if you're listening to this, I can be the next Master Chef.
That's absolutely incredible and so affirming, because that sounds kind of like a very scary situation.
Yeah, I was definitely nervous, and I was like, did I whip the eggs? Like, what, like, how was my meringue? Like, am I pink stiff enough? Like, the only thing Sodelli's have to think about.
Yeah. I'm curious, what was your theme for establishment? Did you have a theme?
Yeah, it was called Go Fish, G-E-A-U-X. So like go, like the way that we do like in Louisiana. So kind of play on words there. And so it was very like Cajun inspired. Mm. I like made like a homemade remoulade sauce, and we did battered catfish po' boys, and what else did we make? A blackened red snapper over mashed potatoes with asparagus. And then fried pickles, and for dessert was beignets. Yeah, it was a pretty solid one for sure.
Yeah.
I think I'm missing something, but I'll have to go back on my notes.
I always appreciate hotelis because of the love for food, but also the attention to detail and memory. Your memory concerning what you guys made, that's incredible. Just the relationship with food.
Yeah, I definitely love to cook. So if you're ever in need of some food inspiration, I do have my baby Instagram that I like to post on, like everything that I make. So I'm big on plating and, you know, focused on more accessible food. Like I'm not a 5-star Michelin chef by any means. But I have a good sense of flavor, and I have a good sense of plating skill and everything. And I think that's one thing that I wish was shown on the TV show more, actually, is that I'm a really big foodie, and like, even though it's not explicitly my job, it is a big hobby of mine. So it would be nice, maybe if there's future seasons, to maybe focus on that a little bit and like kind of show off my skill set there. As I was validated for a year, I have the, like, they call me the sauce queen in culinary, you know, like I can make a good sauce.
That's a huge deal. Saucery is like very difficult in cooking, as I understand. This is my reality TV, like watching of like shows like MasterChef or Top Chef, but like that's a high compliment, I imagine.
Thank you. It's better than being, I don't know, like the burnt meat queen.
It would be very cool to see, especially because you're in Paris, like you cooking or discovering more in terms of that. Like, I think that would be exciting to see.
Yeah. 100%.
So, I guess, what do you want to see for yourself in the future?
I think for me right now, since I'm still figuring out where I want to go next, like location wise, it'll be nice to kind of do a little bouncing around. So the first thing that I'm working on is actually my citizenship. So because I am actually entitled to French citizenship through my grandmother and her ancestry, and she's a citizen, my aunt's a citizen, that's step number one, is get the paperwork, so that way I don't have to get a visa every time I want to travel, and I can actually come and go with a passport and be a full dual citizen. So that would be the first thing that I would definitely want to see for myself. I think second is launching my businesses in a more established context. I kind of did it on the down low for my own purposes, but I think I want to get to a level where I'm able to capitalize on my personal brand that I'm currently building, and also listen to what people want, and being in e-commerce and understanding clientele of different backgrounds and different products, et cetera. I think I'm really well positioned to start that lifestyle brand, as I mentioned. So that's definitely something that I want to get off the ground in the next year. And then I think I also want to, I don't know, I think I want to travel with more people. I think that I don't know if there's a season two, a season three, et cetera. So assuming that, let's say there's no season two, I would like to travel more, especially with friends. And if there is another season, I would love to have my friends come visit me in Paris and see the side of the world that I live on. I think it would be nice to share it with people from back home. It's already been a wonderful experience sharing it with people who I most like more recently met. But I think bridging that gap of like missing my friends from New York and Virginia, et cetera, and bringing them over to Europe would be really fun.
Yeah, that'd be really special to have like
little Cornell reunion over in Paris.
Yeah, that's incredible. I want to ask too, because it sounds like you've maintained a lot of your relationships from Cornell and memories from Cornell. It's been important to you, as I feel like people who go to Cornell are always like, this is still my community, even 5 years after I've graduated. So for somebody who would be listening to this, maybe a prospective Cornell student or even a hotelier, like, what is something you would want to tell them, like advice or something that you learned and you'd want to pass on?
I think I have two pieces of advice, one for Cornell specific and one for life specific. I think my Cornell specific one is don't shy away from meeting strangers. I know that sounds like really vague, but I'm really glad that freshman year, like sometimes I would just like take a deep breath and like sit down next to someone and be like, hey, like I don't have anyone to sit next to, like can I sit with you, like let's make friends. And I still talk to those people to this day. So don't be afraid to make strangers. Cornell people are generally pretty nice, and if they're not, well, you win some, you lose some, you know. I think that my other side of advice that's less on the social side but like more professional side is don't be afraid to walk away from things you don't like. I wasn't loving New York at the time, and I walked away, and now my whole like life has kind of changed because I ended up on a television show. I walked away from different jobs because they weren't fulfilling, and I ended up in different opportunities, and I continued to leverage like salary and promotions and that kind of thing because I wasn't afraid to say, no, this isn't good enough. So there's no shame in leaving a job, and there's no shame in making a change. And I think that that's something that some people should unlearn. I think that there's a little bit of like a taboo-esque vibe when it comes to changing jobs a lot, but I graduated in December 2017. It is now October 2022, and I think I've had four different jobs, and I am successful. I am happy with how my life is right now, and it wouldn't necessarily be happy and successful if I hadn't made those moves. So I definitely say to any prospective graduates or incoming students, don't be afraid to make those leaps of faith.
Yeah. And it sounds like you've stayed true to yourself and your ambitions. And if I were an incoming student, that is definitely advice that like I would have needed, and so many people in my life, because of that pressure, you know, like with this degree to do. So it really sounds like you have made use of all your resources and your passions, and you've been able to walk forward with that, which is exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a little scary at times, like especially like right out of graduation. I was like, what am I doing with my life? Like, how do I know what I want to do? And sometimes you gotta open one door and then walk away from it, so that way you can find the next, you know. And I don't really have regrets. I think that things have happened the way that they're meant to happen, and not to get like super spiritual about it, but I think that you have an intuition, and you should tap into it, because if something doesn't feel right, you're probably right about that. If something feels really good, you also might be right about that. So I think we all got to trust ourselves a little bit more. I think that's what I did, and it got me pretty far.
Yeah. That's awesome. And it sounds like you, even though it's been hard to like move locations and stuff, again, you have created like a new chapter for, or like not even a new chapter, but just an ongoing chapter where you're focusing on yourself and that growth, which is, again, it's been really wonderful to see and witness. as somebody who was in your grade and now 5 years later, it's just always wonderful to see what people keep with them going forward.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you would like to add that we didn't speak about maybe?
Definitely, I guess one last shout out is, hey, apply for the hotel school if you're a prospective Cornell student, because it was great and I loved my major and I loved the friends that I made. And also, if you're not a musician or you are a musician, doesn't matter. Go attend those concerts. There's a lot of a cappella on campus. Go see the Glee Club. Go see the chorus. Go, you know, support the local music scene at Cornell, because there's a lot of talented individuals out there and they definitely deserve the audience.
I love that coming from a fellow singer. Yeah. I appreciate that. And I love to hear it. Thank you so much. This was so fun to speak with you.
You as well.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Fresh from the Hill. Music for Fresh from the Hill was written and produced by Kia Albertson Rogers, class of 2013. To learn more about the podcast and young alumni programs, visit our website, alumni.cornell.edu/young alumni, and follow our Facebook page at Cornell Young Alumni Programs.